Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Brand new day, a brand new show. Have Americans run out of empathy because of too many disasters? I want to dig into this a little bit. I think it's an absolutely fascinating topic. Also in this hour, my rant over at HartmanReport.com today is about how Congress can put the Supreme Court in a box. Yes, they can do it. They just never have, and maybe they will. We'll see. And so that's what we have coming up on the program today, plus your calls. But all these simultaneous disasters, this is the Jacob Stern wrote a piece in The Atlantic, and I think it's a good one and a good point. I noticed, you know, the weekend before last, something, I don't even remember what it was. And I snapped at Louise, and she was like, wait a minute, are you feeling grumpy? And I'm like, whoa, yeah, I am. And it's like, and we both were. I mean, it's like, how did this happen? You know, what do we do to fix it? And, you know, we ended up like hugging each other and kind of talking about it. But what I'm figuring out is that I'm suffering, and I think probably everyone is suffering from some sort of, you know, variation on something like post-traumatic stress disorder or present traumatic stress disorder. I mean, you know, for a year, I couldn't see my grandchildren or my children. I couldn't travel. I've traveled my whole entire life. I couldn't be with my best friend, you know, Jerry, who went through back surgery and then his wife died. He and his wife both got COVID. This is my best friend. I've known, you know, since the early 70s. He lives in New York. In normal circumstances, I would have hopped on a plane, done my show from New York for a few days and slept on Jerry's couch. Couldn't do it. We have COVID. You know, I'm in almost 2 years, 600,000 dead Americans. I knew people who are now dead from COVID. And, you know, we're heading toward a million in large part because of Republican efforts to play down the virus and discourage people from getting vaccinated simply because they want to try and crash the economy and make things look bad for Joe Biden. And then on top of that, we've got heat waves. It was 116 degrees here this summer. Fires, floods, storms, war. We're pulling out of Afghanistan, and well, now it's actually looks like they're doing a damn good job now. They've got 75,000 people out of Afghanistan so far. But, you know, it's still a tough time. There will be people left behind. There's no doubt about that. There will be some horrible footage coming out. You can bet on it. And then on top of that, I mean, here in Portland, and I know this is happening up and down the West Coast, people who live in areas where winter comes and winter is hard are, you know, in some cases, their cities are providing them with free bus tickets out to the West Coast where the winters are mild. And, you know, so we've got this homeless explosion happening. had a homeless guy, you know, chase Louise and throw a water bottle at her, go crazy on her. We had a homeless person try to break into our house. I mean, it's like I've never experienced anything like this. It's nuts. We've got, on top of this, you've got people who are on the verge of becoming homeless because they can't pay rent. They can't get medical care because hospitals are full of COVID. So what do we do about this? Well, I've poured myself into my writing for the last 2 years. I've written 2.5 books, and I edited a third one that on veganism and diet that I want to publish one of these days. But I wrote this book, The Hidden History of American Healthcare, that comes out next week, and I wrote The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, you know, which won't come out until next spring. But it's like I just poured myself into it. I started a new project in March, writing you know, a daily newsletter called TheHartmanReport.com. And, you know, it's like every afternoon, Louise and I spend probably a half hour to an hour figuring out what I'm going to write about. And then I go upstairs in my office and I sit there for 2 or 3 hours and I write the piece. And then in the next morning, I get up at 5 a.m. and I edit it for an hour or so and, you know, publish it. And then go in the office and record the podcast version of it. And it's like, you know, we've gotten busy is the bottom line of all this. My brother, one of my brothers, who is, you know, a computer programmer, has been taking classes, he and his wife, online about how to paint. And he's turned into a pretty good painter. How do you cope with this? And is this messing with our brains? This piece by Jacob Stern over on theatlantic.com, I thought was absolutely fascinating. It was titled, "All These Simultaneous Disasters Are Messing With Our Brains." Right? I mean, outside of the generation that both had the flu epidemic of 1918 and fought World War I at the same time, I don't think we've seen anything like this. And pretty much there's nobody alive who was alive back then, or at least alive and old enough to remember it. So this is new to us. And I get it. I'm speaking from a place of incredible privilege. I actually have a house that I live in. I have a good income. I'm an American. Think of the people living in like Syria who have, you know, where Donald Trump stabbed the Kurds in the back and said, "Okay, you're on your own." And then Turkey came in and started slaughtering them. And ISIS was, you know, and Bashir and the government. I mean, think about, you know, the Afghan refugees that are going to be happening, that are happening right now. They're piling up on the Turkish border, and the Turkish troops are saying, "No, you can't come through." They're piling up I believe it was Tajikistan's border. Somebody called yesterday about that. How do we respond to this? Stephen Taylor, this psychologist who's quoted in this article by Jacob Stern in The Atlantic, talks about how, in some cases, our response is basically casual sadism. And I remember this. I was in Uganda, up in the Numalo, at the Numalo prison farm, up in the Karamoja region of Uganda. It was these are people who mostly subsist on drinking the milk of the animal. They're herders, right? And when Idi Amin's men went through, they murdered all the men and all the boys who were over maybe 12 years old enough to carry a rifle, and raped all the women. And so by the time we got there a year later, as the famine was really starting to bite, there were all these babies starving. And I remember sitting, there was this old Ethiopian priest, and he looked like he was 100 years old, and he was just this little shriveled up guy, this Ethiopian, who was kind of running the place. The Red Cross had left. That's why we went in. You know, it was me and Horst von Heyer, a guy from the Salem organization in Germany. And so we're sitting, and this guy, this old priest had a secret stash in the middle of a famine. I mean, literally people were dying all around us. He had this little secret stash of passion fruit, and they were all shriveled up, these little blackened, shriveled up things. And he cut one open and was doling out to us these little wet gelatinous seeds that were like, "Hey, moisture food." And he says, "What do you get when you give 5,000 starving people of, you know, food?" And I'm like, "I don't know, what do you get?" And he goes, "20,000 starving people." And he starts laughing. And it was like, you know, gallows humor. How do you deal with this stuff? And then on top of that, we've got wildfires filling the skies with smoke. We've got earthquakes leveling cities. You got a disaster in Haiti. You've got buildings collapsing in Florida. Joe Ruzak, a PTSD researcher at Palo Alto, he says, there's a sense that people's coping reserves are kind of finite and you can diminish your reserves. Now, some people, and this is just like the Kauai study, which I've talked about for years on this program, you know, where they looked at children of great poverty. These were children of migrant farm workers, sugarcane workers on the island of Kauai, Hawaii, where there was basically no escape from the poverty. And what they found was that a larger percentage of those children were highly resilient, even though they were the victims of grinding poverty and terrible abuse. And a higher percentage of them than normal were very fragile. In other words, the middle, the, okay, I'm sort of resilient and sort of fragile, that middle got much, much narrower, and the two extremes, highly resilient and highly fragile, were exaggerated. I'm guessing that's what's going on. But what do you do? I mean, one of our sponsors, we've got, you know, the sponsor, Annie's Kit Clubs, and, you know, on the commercial side of the show, and they've got a new program that they're advertising on our program, where they're talking about, you know, if you crochet, you can get this kit every month to crochet something, and they have this list of charities, and they give it to people in need. So it's like people are finding ways to kind of reactivate their empathy. I've been finding myself spending a lot more time just like as I'm walking around outside, or even just sitting in the house, just looking up or looking out at a tree or the sky or the skyline or the river or whatever, and saying, wow, thank you, God, for this. Thank you for this life. Going through in my mind the names of people I know as I essentially am saying prayers for them, hoping that each one is getting a little shot of light. I've gotten to where I'm like religiously, no pun intended, doing that every single day. It's like my coping mechanism. How do we deal with this? And how do we deal with the people who want to make it worse because they think it's going to benefit them politically? How do we deal with the rage about that? I mean, when I look at Republicans, and then sometimes there's like, you know, this, is it Schadenfreude, you know, the kind of joy in others' pain? Senator André Jacques Depere of Wisconsin. Excuse me, André Jacques of Depere, Wisconsin. He's a Republican lawmaker who has spent the last couple months telling people that masks are, you know, a violation of your freedom and vaccines are terrible things. Well, you know, he's on a ventilator now. He's probably going to die. And, you know, part of me wants to say a prayer for him, and part of me is like, hey, I hope a whole lot of people hear about it. It's a tough time. And I think, you know, step one to figuring out how we heal through this, how we come through this, is acknowledging that it's a tough time and talking about the strategies that we've all come up with to try to make it through a tough time. Your thoughts on that? Eugene in Nanticoke, Pennsylvania. Hey, Eugene, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching
us on Free Speech. Yeah, I've called a couple of times before. I'm feeling the same way. I'll tell you what, it's been like this maybe, past 2 years or so. I have some physical issues. I'm not an invalid, but I'm pretty much immobilized. I manage to do shopping and go to the doctor and pick up prescriptions, but it's stay at home. And how I've been coping with it is, you know, in this weather, it's been extremely uncomfortable here. It's always been in the 90s with very, very high humidity. But in the evenings when it cools down a little bit, I've been doing some things in the yard, planting some shrubs and some bushes and things like that.
Which is kind of hopeful stuff. You know, if you're planting something that's going to grow, that implies that you have a sense of a future that's coming, a positive future.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a quitter. I was in quite a bit of pain with my physical condition, but I always pushed harder, you know, try to go past my limits. So I've been coping with the issues by doing things like that. I was in the emergency room twice with vertigo. They ran every test under the sun. They couldn't find anything. My personal feeling is I was just overwhelmed with everything, with the heat, with what's going on in Afghanistan, with the Republicans and their false voting. Recall,
voter suppression,
all that.
All this stuff.
And you know what? I live along the Allegheny Mountain Range, and to tell you the honest truth, the mountains are quite beautiful, but when I look at them, I see coal, I see arsenic, I see cyanide, I see chromium B, you know, poisons that the Susquehanna River was running red with sulfur mine acid for years and years. It's beginning to clean up a little bit now.
Mm-hmm.
And even though coal was an important part of our industrial revolution, it contributed to the steel industry and the railroads. Its time has passed, and I don't know. These are just things that, you know, there's nobody here to talk to this about. I mean, it's like mm-hmm. a bunch of people running around with their like ostriches with their head in the sand.
You wonder, Eugene, if some of the right wing stuff that's happening out there is also, you know, a coping attempt, you know, getting guns and behaving like a tough guy and it's got to be the fault of those black people or brown people or immigrants.
Oh, yeah.
You know, is that also a way of dealing with stress? Dysfunctional,
Personally, my opinion is the area is becoming more integrated with the mix. And I'm seeing a diversity of people. And people that do not look like me, I find, are just as warm and friendly as anybody else.
That's great.
So, there's the music. So I just wanted to call in and... let you know how.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Eugene.
Radiant.
And the planting of the bushes that really resonates with me. I it's like planning for the future. Eugene, thank you. It's nice to hear from you, and I'm glad that you're making it through. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Stick around. I got to tell you about the Supreme Court. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, I want to tell you about the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, there's multiple articles scattered around. There's a couple of good ones over at rawstory.com about how the Supreme Court is basically up to two things. One is we now have three justices on the court who have essentially come right out and said that if the Republicans, using these new laws in these states, try to throw the Electoral College vote in 2024, regardless of how it turns out from the official count, if they want to throw, let's say, Georgia and Florida and Arizona all vote for, let's just pretend Joe Biden and Donald Trump are, you know, on the ticket in 2024. They all vote, they send their electoral votes to Joe Biden. And then the state legislature says, you know, we're just going to ignore that. We passed this law that says we can ignore the electoral vote, and we're going to send a slate of electors, because we get to choose under the Constitution. We're going to send Donald Trump electors to Washington, D.C. To hell with what the people said. And so far, we've got at least three members of the United States Supreme Court saying, yeah, I'm down with that. John Roberts, Sam Alito, and Clarence Thomas. And we don't know what the opinion of the rest of them is. Particularly Kavanaugh, Barrett, and Gorsuch, you know, the people that Trump put on the court. In addition, you've got, like, this stay-in-Mexico policy. You know, basically some of the most brutal policies of the Trump administration with regard to immigration. The Biden administration tried to fix them or undo them, and you've got Trumpy judges saying, oh, no, you can't do that, Biden. So I'm pointing out in this article over at HartmanReport.com in great detail how John Roberts, when he worked for Ronald Reagan in 1981 in the U.S. State Department, how John, or in the White House, John Roberts wrote this long memo saying, you know, Congress can just overrule the Supreme Court. It's right there in Article 3, Section 2. You've all heard me rant about it forever. I've been talking about this for years. I wrote a whole book about it, The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. And here I am laying this stuff out, hoping that some members of Congress are listening, saying, you can overrule the Supreme Court. You can put the Supreme Court in a box. You can change. You can regulate the Supreme Court, and you can create exceptions to what the Supreme Court can rule on because it's right there in Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. Don't believe me? Look it up. So we'll see where that goes. Pick up your phone calls after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Have you found any interesting, unique coping skills through this time, through this difficult COVID time that you'd like to share? We'll be right back with your calls.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Robert in Bainbridge Island, Washington. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, two things that are really important. Actually, a third I just noticed. Bainbridge Island now has over 90% people vaccinated and wearing masks at all times. Well, I'm telling you, that's not all our county doesn't follow that. So Kitsap County is having a horrible, horrible outbreak right now. The worst case incidents that we've had during the whole pandemic, because a lot of people in Kitsap County are not wearing masks, not getting vaccinated, et cetera.
We're seeing the same thing in the red counties here in Oregon. They're just exploding, and the hospitals are overwhelmed. They're sending their people to the blue county hospitals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Across the water to Seattle. That's why they have a bumper sticker in Kitsap County. It's called Clear Cut Bainbridge, because Bainbridge happens to be a little bit more progressive area in Kitsap County, and so they want to clear cut it of all the trees and maybe all the people too. I don't know.
Yeah, but, I have a friend. Anyway, I have friends who live there, actually, on Bainbridge.
Yeah. Well, it's more progressive, that's for sure, which is nice. It's safer for people too. Mm-hmm. But the reason I was calling is that a few calls back, you highlighted something very important that a colleague of mine, when I worked as a consultant for the VA, Joe Ruzak, has talked about PTSD and the adaptive reserve that people have to cope with awful things. Mm-hmm. I wanted to let you and your audience know that while I was doing that work for the VA, we developed something called resilience enhancement, which is a programmed approach to putting together all the most effective coping mechanisms, coping skills, coping behaviors that we could find in the literature, and putting it into sort of a, what you'd call a psychoeducational package. Mm-hmm. And that's available, you know, as a download if
really?
You would care to
Where?
Have. Yeah, I couldn't do anything with it right now, but I can send that to you.
You said it's available as a download. Is it on a public website someplace?
No, it's on my computer.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I can make it available that way. And plus, if I just gave it to you, you have a pretty public.
It belongs
to me.
It belongs to you because you wrote it
by the VA. Yeah.
Okay. Geez, if you can toss it on some kind of a server, even on, at a wall, and then tweet it, I mean, that would be a start. Robert, we can, I'll leave it to you to figure out the details of how to get it to people and how to tell people about it on this program. But for right okay. now, can you just summarize very quickly what it is that you're talking about here? What are these solutions?
Well, the truth of the matter is that there's different categories of coping. So one of them is what's called cognitive coping skills, which is what we call how you appraise the world, what you make of it.
Right.
It turns out that that's the most important part of the whole equation, is that, you know, as you see the world, you respond.
So this is the old thing that it doesn't matter what happens to you. What matters is the story you tell yourself about what happens to you, how you interpret
exactly.
your experience.
Exactly. That's been shown to boost your cognitive coping reserve.
That was the main outcome, of the Kauai study. This was a 40-year longitudinal study, as I recall. It was done from the 1940s to the 1980s among these, highly vulnerable children stuck, the children of sugarcane farmers on Kauai, Hawaii. And what they found was that the children who ended up more resilient than average as a consequence of exposure to grinding poverty and child abuse were the ones who told themselves the story that they were not the ones at fault, that somebody else
exactly.
was at fault, and they had inner resources. And then they looked at the children who just fell apart, the ones who became less resilient, more fragile as a consequence of this exposure to poverty and child abuse, and they told themselves the story that it was their own fault. They internalized the blame or they told themselves the story that they lived in a world that absolutely made no sense and they were unable to make sense out of it. And as a consequence
exactly.
of that, they became more fragile. These are all cognitive skills, that is, thinking skills. And we actually have some control over the stories we tell ourselves about what happens to us. We have default stories.
We have much more control than we think we do. Sometimes
absolutely. We have default stories that go back to childhood, but we can reinvent new stories at any time.
That's the basis of PTSD, by the way, is that you have a horrible story that somehow allowed you to survive a trauma, especially in childhood, and it no longer applies, but it still recurs
right.
in your thinking. So
right.
that's one of the strategies. Another one is what's called soliciting social support, because many people who are coping with awful, awful things begin to feel like they're all alone. And so we have ways of prompting people to solicit support from people they know and from the community at large. And especially with vets that we worked with, that was a very serious problem, because they couldn't, soldiers were trained to not admit any vulnerability, weakness,
right.
second thoughts, and so forth. So creating groups where we did this resilience enhancement was very influential.
Well, this is also one of the reasons why I refer to this program as your media support group for We the People. I mean, we are here
exactly.
together. I think talk radio actually fills a social vacuum that has emerged with the latter part of the Industrial Revolutions, particularly starting in the 1950s, as we and moved out to the suburbs and we became more isolated from each other, and we didn't live in tenement buildings anymore where we hung out with our neighbors on the fire escape and all that kind of stuff, that social media, Facebook and things like that, and talk radio both kind of fill that space.
Absolutely. And I think it's partly, like you say, due to the changes in the way we live. Back when people lived in smaller groups,
mm-hmm.
15 or less, there was very, very strong support for
correct.
All kinds of behavior. And as people went to cities and had anonymity that they could forget their past
right.
or hide or
and
whatever.
And we're wired for that social experience.
Exactly. So
that's what evolution prepared us for.
Well, that's something that I'm a public health neuroscientist. That's called a mismatch disease, where our evolutionary past wants us to do something like eat as much fat and sugar as we can to survive on the savannah. And then our current reality is if you go to McDonald's, you can get as much as you want with no problem. And people, that's why obesity is such
right.
a problem.
Yeah, well, this is my book on hunters and farmers, that people with ADHD are actually, they're carrying a skill set that would provide them with an outstanding ability to survive in a hunting gathering world. but it's less useful in a farming or industrial world.
Absolutely, yeah. It's actually harmful, I think, in many ways.
It can, it wounds people. Yes, absolutely.
The final final part of the package, Tom, is something that we developed. It's a physiological intervention. It's a self-soothing, self-calming technique using a type of biofeedback called heart rate variability. Mm-hmm. And it's been shown to improve people's ability to cope with all sorts of disasters and painful processes and difficult situations. So we put that into a package where all people we worked on would actually learn how to do that. It's available pretty generally now, actually, but it's not really the sort of more scientific version of it. It's now more of a cartoon with Apple Watches and so forth.
Louise and I have like kind of three adaptive things that we've been doing that might fall into this category. I'd love to get your feedback on. Number one is every single day we walk for about 2 miles. And we don't just walk. We also, as we're walking, try to have a moment of awe, A-W-E. You know, we try to find things to, look at those clouds in the sky. Isn't that beautiful? Or look at the river over there, or look at that duck, or look at, you know, this plant really, I mean, whatever. Just try to find something that's like, oh, yeah. So that's number one. Number two is I've been meditating using this Muse headband, you know, an EEG neurofeedback headband. And I find it very, very useful. And then number three, I haven't done it so much this summer. I do this mostly in the winter. Back when I broke my back skydiving when I was a teenager, I discovered that if I took long hot baths, you know, my back didn't hurt. And so I've been doing that. It's a physical thing. And we got one of these kind of percussion, and it's not really a vibrator. It's a massage machine, you know. And Louise and I have been doing each other's bodies this way. These all seem to me like they're actually therapeutic psychologically.
They are. They're therapeutic. Not really what we found in doing some research on this is that it's not just therapeutic psychologically, but in the larger sense of, you know, therapy meaning healing in all regards, physical, emotional, spiritual, as well as psychologically important. Yeah. And I wanted to say that your walk has the potential of two important elements. One is that, you know, Hippocrates had a famous saying that everybody knows called, first of all, cause no harm.
Right. The Hippocratic Oath.
What was the second thing he said?
I don't know.
Follow the healing path of nature. And going out in nature has been shown many times to produce lots of really good.
Oh, they did an amazing study where they showed that people in hospitals who had a window that looked out over something green recovered faster than people who didn't have a window.
They recovered faster. They used less pain medication. They needed less follow-up. That's Roger Ulrich's study that's about 30 years old and is largely ignored.
And it's never been debunked.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's used now. It's environmental psychology. It's used by people that pay attention.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the chance to put that out there.
Robert, thank you for a well-focused, tightly, you know, a nice, tight, concise summary of a bunch of things that we can be doing. And that was brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And if you figure out a way to make it available on the internet, you know, drop me a note or let me know somehow. And I'll do whatever I can to promote it. Robert, thank you very much for listening to us there at Bainbridge Island. You know, I find myself praying more, too. It's interesting. Steve in St. Petersburg, Florida, listening on the Tom Hartman app. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Well, first of all, thank you, as always, for bringing up the big picture topics that nobody else is discussing. I'll be as brief as I can. We are already in the sixth mass extinction event.
Yes.
And humans are pretty clueless, unlike other animals, as to when a horrible disaster is coming. But we're picking up on it, and we're panicking, just like the last 2 hours on the Titanic. That accounts for a lot of this so-called stress. It's fear. It's everything. Now, how do you cope with reality? First of all, I would say that depression is anger turned inwards, and that it's time for us to accept reality, that the human experiment is you know, basically destroying the biosphere, and we're going to go through some Mad Max movie-style hard times. Another movie would be The Road. We're going to see it in our lifetime. Well, how do you deal with reality? First of all, don't turn the anger inwards. Fight back by standing up for the innocent native flora and fauna that our species is destroying. Planting trees that are native, defending native wildlife is another thing. Beware of going into too much weed, too much booze, too many antidepressants. Number three, extreme exercise, not just walking. I'm glad you guys walk, but raising your heart rate up enough to get your endorphins and dopamine system engaged. Number four, find affinity groups. Number five, give voice to the voiceless. Number six, recognize that, as the Buddha said, life is suffering. There's no way around it, and embrace your grief, your mourning, your anger, and your sadness about what our species has done to this world. That's how I cope.
I think that's brilliant, Steve. The one slight tweak I would make to it is that I do not believe that what we are doing is human nature. I believe that what we are living in is a highly dysfunctional culture, and that history, particularly paleo history, demonstrates to us, and tribal people are still alive today that we can learn directly from, demonstrates to us that humans do have the ability to live in a way that is sustainable and that is in balance and harmony with their natural environment. We have that ability built into us. We just have to keep learning the lesson to get there. And you look at the Melanesians who took over the British New Caledonia Island or New Zealand, for example, the Maori people. And they all went through this cycle of basically wiping out their environment and then saying, holy crap, and then figuring out a way to live that was sustainable and reinventing their societies. And so, you know, I see hope actually in all of this, Steve.
Well, one reason we love you, Tom, is because you still have rational-based hope, and I will go with what you're going with, and I hope everybody can understand that, you know, it's the Titanic. They had 2.5 hours. We might have 2.5 decades, but we better get things going fast in the right direction or else God help us all.
Well, and there are lifeboats, and I think we have to acknowledge some people are not going to get in them, and that's what we're seeing around the world. I mean, you know, there's famines and displacements and refugees, and that's a terrible, terrible thing. We need to do everything we can to ameliorate that situation. But, you know, building lifeboats and expanding lifeboats while we still have the time now and charting a new course. I'm just mangling this metaphor, Steve. But
Thank you for everything, Tom.
Yeah, good talking to you, Steve. Thank you very much for your acknowledgement. I appreciate it. It is 9 minutes before the hour. Gary at Alpharetta, Georgia. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hello, Tom Hartman. Thank you once more.
Hey, Gary. Greed has no heart.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, this is the core of my little rant. And I can appreciate you saying what you say more and more. You find yourself in prayers. And I think that is, you know, I don't talk religion. You don't talk religion. But there is an aspect of it, which is true, and it's a good thing. And walking, I think that's a great thing to do. Great thing to do. So why did I call? I called, for one thing, to quote FDR before I close the conversation down. But to me, every day, if you're searching for that one element, it's always more clear to me every day that humility is the opposite of pride. Mm-hmm. And I think, frankly, I think that's the root of our problem in America. There comes a point where does this make sense? Is it? You'll tell me, and I'll listen to you. It comes a point where there's too much wealth in a civilized society.
I'm not sure it's a matter of whether there's too much or not enough wealth. Although obviously, if it's not enough, you've got a real crisis. Look at what's going on in Haiti right now. But it's because so much of that wealth was extracted by greedy individuals, you know, whether it was the French or whether it was, you know, people who were put in charge of the country and just bled it dry. So I think it's more the distribution of wealth, Gary.
Okay, well, but we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's called greed.
Yeah.
Greed is personal, too. Greed is how you treat other people, as I said before, and how you administer government.
Yeah.
How you administer government. So in closing, if you don't mind, I'm going to quote FDR from 1937.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what he said. We have always known that heedless self-interest was bad morals. We know now that it is bad economics.
Hmm. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And thank you, Gary. Thank you for that. It's great to hear from you. Let's see here. Bob in Portland. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Well, your opening rant reminded me of an old saying from the I Ching that says you can't fight evil directly. You make energetic progress in the good. And I think when you described what you did, writing two books, I come from a place of relative privilege. I'm a musician, but I was able to play online for most of the year and make some money.
Mm-hmm.
I started opening up and playing in nursing homes again and just got shut down because of coming back. I was playing outside and I'm not going out anymore. Because it's too risky. So I just got to find something good to do to take up my time, and that's what I've done for the last year and a half. And I think the thing we need to do most now for energetic progress in the good is to take back the state legislatures. We need to, every two years, the legislatures are up. And Arizona could get flipped in 2022. Florida could get flipped. Texas could get flipped. They can all become Democratic state legislatures and stop the nonsense with the voting. The voting is the real problem that we face now.
Yeah.
We can't solve anything else until we solve the voting problem.
I'm with you. Bob, thank you. And the Supreme Court is starting to weigh in on this and putting their thumb on the Republican side of the scale, which is why I wrote this rant about the Supreme Court today. Bob, thank you. Brilliant.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
Susan in Decatur, Georgia. Hey, Susan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm well. What's up?
I've been trying to call you for 2 weeks, but I'm homeschooling for the second year, a ninth grader and a fourth grader.
Oh, my.
But 2 weeks ago on a Monday, you made the comment on one of your rants that America is a failed state. But on top of that, I'd like to add that America is a third world country wrapped in a bootleg Gucci belt bought on a 22% interest credit card funded by China. We are a huge failure.
We've got a lot of upsides, Susan, but broadly speaking, I can't disagree with your analysis, sadly.
I want to also say that the situation here in Georgia is actually beyond dire. There's an article on the AJC from last Thursday.
It's the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the newspaper,
yes,
the statewide newspaper.
Yes, and it says, on Thursday, it says, I can't remember the title. I didn't copy the title. But anyway, it says, Georgia Public Health Commissioner Dr. Kathleen Toomey is recommending that students be required to wear masks when quarantining in school as a safety precaution to curb the spread of COVID. Toomey made the recommendation in a letter to state representatives Thursday. The advice comes 2 weeks after the agency issued an order allowing schools to establish their own quarantine rules for students exposed to the virus.
So let me get this straight, Susan. What you're saying is that in Georgia public schools right now, if a kid is known to have been exposed to the virus and therefore probably or possibly contagious, you're contagious for about 4 days before you show symptoms, highly contagious, in fact, with the Delta variant, that that child has the option of not wearing a mask while in quarantine? Is that what you're telling me?
Not only in quarantine, but they are allowing the schools, if the school says, well, yes, my child is positive, or yes, my child has been in contact with a positive student, but I demand that my child be allowed to go to school, and I'm an anti-masker, so they can't wear a mask.
So they not only don't go into quarantine, they're sitting in the classroom, quote, in quarantine right next to all the other kids with no mask on.
Yes, sir.
Is that it? So,
yes, sir.
So the whole quarantine thing is just a label. It's not actually a physical
fake
place to which they relocate fake these kids.
It's fake. So if you know that Georgia Governor Kemp is just like death sentence DeSantis, I'm sure that it's going on in other red states. They're all playing the same game.
Oh, yeah. Tate Reeves is doing this in Mississippi, too.
Well, and on top of all that, right now they're running ads 24/7 on all media in Georgia that if you will please work as a bus driver because they are missing 60% of their bus drivers.
Because they're out sick? Or because they're scared?
Because they've either been out sick, they've died from COVID last year, they're scared to death, they're not vaccinating, whatever the issues are, right?
Right.
But the other week, when you made that statement, the same week about America as a failed state, there was another guy that called that said that America is dismantling the education system. And what better way to dismantle it than not be able to provide the poor people a ride to school?
Well, this was, you know, we had the person on from the Independent Women's Forum who was going on and on about how, you know, teachers need to be exposed to kids without masks. Why? Well, I think they're trying to destroy our public schools. I really do. This is Betsy DeVos's agenda. Susan, thank you. Thank you for the heads up. Tom Hartman here with you. We've got a lot on the table here. The right-wing websites, by the way, this is from the writing newsletter, THERIGHTING.com. You know, top news headlines from the far right for the rest of us. From DonaldJTrump.com, how many terrorists will Biden bring to America? Right. See, it was Trump who who actually shut down for 2 years the special immigrant visa program so that people who had worked with our troops in Afghanistan, who we had promised, you know, you give us a couple of years of your life, we'll get you out of the country. We made this promise to them. And then, you know, Stephen Miller said, hey, wait a minute, those people are not... They don't look like white Europeans. And Trump was like, oh, my God, brown people coming to America, and they shut the program down. And this is what Biden inherited, a totally broken program. So Trump says, how many terrorists will Biden bring to America? The Washington Free Beacon, DHS braces for terror threat from southern border. There has never been a terrorist attack from the southern border. James Polk claimed there was one in 1847, 48? Yes, Mexico has invaded America, and we got the Mexican-American War out of that, but he lied. Abraham Lincoln called him out on that lie. He was arguably the first president to lie us into an unnecessary war. It was James Polk and the Mexican-American War. Of course, we did get Arizona, New Mexico, and the southern part of California out of that. But hey, you know, it wasn't right. American greatness. On terrorism, Biden is either dishonest or delusional. Front page, another website from the right wing. Biden's gift to global jihadis, a safe national homeland. Newsmax, Biden administration must be held accountable on Afghanistan. Washington Examiner. This is interesting. Trump set the stage for Biden's Afghanistan debacle. At least one source on the right gets this right. But I think the Babylon Sisters headline over at Democratic Underground really summarizes it best. Republicans silent as Biden gets 21,600 people out of Afghanistan in one single day. It's amazing. We're over 75,000 evacuees. And the Republicans, what do they have to say? He's not doing it right. He's not doing it fast enough. And, oh, my God, he's bringing brown people. Oh, my God. Bobby in La Puente, California. Hey, Bobby, you wanted to get back to our first hour topic of dealing with the trauma of wildfires and global warming and COVID and an insane president for 4 years. And
Nazism. Yeah, yes, Nazism. The Nazis on the street.
There you go.
Look, how do I cope with it, Tom? I wake up in the morning, thy will be done. Keep me from my will. Because if I take the will, I'll mess it up. So I do that. I have to humble myself. I'm not a prayer, but I had to learn. Okay? I'm alive. Like, you lost a best friend. I lost my brother. What was it? November 3rd, the last remaining. So I don't get to talk to him anymore. So, okay, how do I deal with it? Divorce from self-pity. Gratefulness. I write a grateful list. What am I grateful for? I got a home that's paid. I got a pension coming in. Okay, we got a mega gap insurance thanks to you, Tom. Me and my wife retired, so there's a lot to be grateful. But for the people struggling, you know, I pray. I don't know if it means anything, but it comes from my heart. You know what I mean? Yeah. When you feel that humble, like you, hugging your wife, wow, it means something to me. Then I look at my wife. If it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't be here.
Same here.
Honest.
Honest to God. Hey. Same here. Bobby, the nature of my prayers has changed in the last year or so, and I've really noticed it. And I think it's because of all the social distancing. But you know, I'm finding that there are two things I'm doing a lot more of than I ever did before. One is specifically, and even during times that are not like I'm sitting down to say a prayer, just looking at the world and acknowledging what a gift it is to be alive. How much I know that my mother or father, who are no longer with us, you know, what they would give for just 1 minute to be able to breathe this air and see this world, you know, and just, you know, being so grateful for being alive and expressing that gratitude. But the other thing is, I've been going through lists of people, and some of them people I haven't seen in years, but they'll just pop into my head. And I've got a list of friends. I've got a list of people who are my opponents, as it were, even political people. And all the people who work on this program, I literally go through this list every day now and imagine the faces of these people. I have no idea if, you know, Christian Science is right and I'm actually sending energy to those people that's helping them and healing them. But what I can tell you is that, and particularly with, you know, old friends, we have some friends from Vermont that we haven't seen physically in years. I mean, we still talk to them maybe every other month on the phone, but haven't seen them in years. And I go through the family, you know, the mom and dad and all three kids and visualize them. And what it's doing for me is it's making me feel like I'm still in touch with these people. Now, they have no idea that I'm even thinking of them. But doing this every day seems to be, you know, if it's not spiritual or if there's not some sort of magical energy going back and forth between me and them, at the very least, I'm feeling like I'm in touch with people that I'm physically out of touch with. I think it's therapeutic, if nothing else. What do you think?
It is. You know, when you think of people, my wife taught me that's a prayer. When you think of somebody you haven't for a long time, that's a prayer, honoring their memory.
Yep.
Fred Gratz, I wish you would have met this guy, an engineer next to me, right? Mechanical, got me to graduate drafting, but I didn't like it. A wonderful man, and I think of the time I could have spent with him. Bob, you can still go to school. If he was alive, Tom, Bob, it's not too late. He'd be 130. It's not too late to get educated.
But
I think of, like, yourself. To me, you're like a brother. The same month, three brothers, yours is still alive. And I bless you for that. But what got me, when you shared on the air, you apologized for your whiteness or, you know, white privilege. And you don't know what it done to me. Like, wow, I can believe in somebody. You have a good heart. Your callers as well. You don't know how much the show means to me. You even got my granddaughter, 8 years old, reading to me because she lacked in reading. You know, lazy, like to play, but good in math. Pop, I'm going to read to you. Man, I am blessed. Tom, I shouldn't be alive. And I feel that, no, that's self-pity. So I'm on a journey. What I'm doing now is grieving my family. I haven't had time because I grew up in PTSD. And to me, okay, I isolate, no big deal. I used to do it. But now, you know, I exercise. I go in a garden. You got me motivated. Even though I'm disabled, I was a gym rat, pumping iron, 400 bench press, all this baloney for what? And now the garden, walking out to my granddaughter, look, Papa, spider. She's not a, you know what I mean? Exploring. Mm-hmm. It's a gift. I didn't share it with my daughters, you know, my first clan because I had alcoholism. But I do have to admit, I do smoke cannabis because I have to have something because of the damage I had, you know, growing up. So I don't abuse it. Alcohol is the furthest thing from my mind.
Yeah.
If I have to call somebody, I have a couple of people that will pull my covers or I'll pull them. You know, we help each other.
Yep.
You know, reach out to somebody, either call or somebody. Listen.
Yep. There's a lot of good stuff there. There's a lot of good stuff there. Bobby, thank you.
Bless you and your family. Thank you.
And back at you, Bobby. You know, I send you all the light and love I can. Bobby, thank you very much. In fact, I frequently, in my prayers, you're not supposed to talk about what you do. You know, what was Jesus in Matthew? He said in the Sermon on the Mount, go in your closet and pray in secret. Don't talk about it in public because then it doesn't work anymore. So I'm going to stop right there. Lisa in San Francisco. Hey, Lisa, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Oh, I love Bobby. I wanted to also tell you how I'm coping. I've been on my walks collecting rocks, and I bring them home, and I have paint pens, and I paint happy faces on them, and then I redistribute them in my neighborhood.
Oh, how sweet.
And I'm on the first floor, so I can often hear people walking by talking about them. I don't know if it brings them more joy or me, but... it's a simple little thing, and I'm taking a walk anyway, so I figure I'll just do that. And I'm drawing on them right now, and drawing the faces makes me feel good, and then when I put them out there makes me feel good. It's simple, and it's not really anything, but it's something.
You're bringing light to your neighborhood. That is wonderful, Lisa. That is so sweet, bringing light to your neighborhood. Lisa, thank you.
It's a San Francisco thing.
Yeah, indeed, I guess. But it could be, you know, anybody could do that. It could be a national thing. Lisa, thank you.
For sure.
So nice to hear from you. And thank you again for watching us on Free Speech TV. Virginia in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Virginia, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I really appreciate you. You keep me sane.
Thank you.
All the things that people have said, I use. But I also go to what I call the root issue, which is centering in your inner spiritual identity and identifying there, not politically, not externally, not by your wealth, not by the terrible times or the good times. But you have this inner strength despite any circumstances or difficult times. And I just found something online, and I'll quote it if it's all right.
Sure.
It's from Sound Healing, Beloved Come Home. May Lan, there is a place of stillness within you that is wise, aware, present, perceptive, grounded, and trusting. This is the true core of your being, hidden beneath layers of the hurt this world has wrapped around you. The remembrance of who you are to your inner peace in the light of your soul's essence.
Breathe in,
breathe out. You have arrived to welcome home. Yeah. It's many religions, including Buddhism, Lao Tzu, even Christianity, you know, reborn to the spirit. It's a spiritual awakening to your true self, so you don't have to find external worth by comparison, wealth, power. This is where all the Republicans are trapped. They're looking for themselves outside themselves. They're looking for their self-worth outside themselves by competition, by exploitation.
And money.
And money. And all this excess greed uses up the planet. This all fits together like a perfect jigsaw puzzle. I use Tai Chi. I have a garden. I have an organic garden. I help the pollinators. I go out in the morning. I listen to a certain aria by Sarah Brightman called Canto della Terra, and I, I greet the sun. I understand your wonder and appreciation at the amazing world we live in. And I was just talking, I'm a home care aide. I come through the gate. There's one woman there, and she is saying, everybody's coming through complaining about the heat and this and that. They complain all day to me. And I said, yes, they're focused on the negative, and it blocks all their ability to receive all the beauty and happiness in the world. It's just like a wall they put around, and it's like Trump's bubble, and Trump is caught in this whole externalized self-comparative self-worth. Mm-hmm. He has to be richer, and he has to step on other people because he sees them a competition. Once you find your real self, none of this will disturb you. You don't care what people think of you. You don't care about if you're better or worse. You just know we're all here on a journey back to our true selves,
right,
and shedding all of this externalized wounding and competition and tiny little wars with between yeah. neighbors, friends, people, tribes, other nations. It all comes from one problem.
Yeah.
So,
you know, the saying at funerals is, dust thou art, to dust returnest. I think it's light thou art, to light returnest. I think we came from the light, we returned to the light, and part of our job here is to express the light. But,
I think it's the main job.
Yeah.
People get stuck on the wrong path.
There you go. Virginia, thank you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.